going to put you in this guy's shoes. Your name is Sean S. Cunningham.
Cool.
Oh.
You're blown away by the success of a recent horror movie called Halloween.
Halloween, yeah.
You ask yourself, how the fuck can I capitalize on the success of that movie? Now, you can't have Halloween, obviously, so you need to pick another spooky day.
Uh-huh.
And there's not many, really, so Friday the 13th, why not?
Sure.
There's at least one every year. Sometimes there's up to three a year. You hire a dude named Victor Miller to write a screenplay. And actually, the original screenplay was not called Friday the 13th. It was called, like, you know, Fun Times at Murder Lake or some stupid shit
that
like
sucks,
that.
Dude.
That's not the title. I'm paraphrasing, but it was some garbage like that. Like Camp Blood or something.
Yeah, I get you.
They scraped together $550,000 from investors to make the movie. Paramount buys the distribution rights. It's released in theaters, and it grosses $39.7
million. Damn.
At that time, that's a big
chunk
of change.
1980 money.
That's fucking success.
Which is
right
also,
there.
It's 72 times more than what was spent to make it. So obviously that's a huge hit. You couldn't make that much off it if you'd put it on fucking, you know, 33 black on the fucking roulette wheel.
Right.
72 times your investment, pretty fucking good deal. So because of that massive success, over the course of the next 29 years, 11 more films are made in the Friday the 13th series, grossing a combined total of $529 million. At the worldwide box office and becoming a staple of popular culture in the process. The only recurring character throughout all 12 films is the masked murder machine known as Jason Voorhees. And well, even that's kind of debatable, but he does appear, or at least is mentioned in each movie. And it is this character that we're here today to discuss, which I actually found rather odd, even though I was the one who came up with this episode, because it's not... He's a character that doesn't speak.
Yeah.
He's never, he doesn't have a single line throughout any fucking, any of these 12 movies. We don't know what he's thinking. We don't get an insight into his fucking character as he chops and crushes and rips.
We kind of do through flashback and shit in various films.
Mm,
we get a look at his childhood.
It's pretty sparse.
Sparse, sure.
Not much character development for Jason.
He's just sort of the personification of murder in most of these movies. He doesn't really seem to have any other interests or desires or conflicts or anything. He's just driven by a desire to kill. The only thing we really know about him other than that is that he's shy about his face because he is deformed. Right. We know that he loves his mother.
Are you including the remake in this or no?
I'm including every iteration of the character.
Okay, so
if
we're doing that, then remember that in that one, me and you were watching, he did have that thing where he kind of held that girl captive. That was a kind
That's
of a
true.
Weird...
Well, we'll talk. We're going to talk about all the movies and how his character evolved and all that shit. But yeah, I guess he did have a little bit more of a something of a, well, that was because she reminded him of his mother, though. So it kind of fits in with the theme.
But Jason, the only person, Jason in his movies always killed everyone, though.
Right.
Like, there was never any, like, I'm going to spare you for some reason.
Well, actually, there is a moment, and we'll get to it, but there is a moment in Friday the 13th, part two, where he does momentarily spare a character because he becomes convinced that it's his mother.
Okay. Well,
so there is this idea that even though Jason seems to just have total indiscriminate murderous rampage kind of shit going on.
There's something.
There is.
Yeah. There's a thought
there's
process.
There's a love for his mother, and there's also an ability. There seems to be some basic strategic sort of implementations. Careful planning. He's good at stalking people. He's good at not being noticed until the moment that he wants to be. He's stealthy for a big monster.
That is true.
You know, and he likes to arrange bodies in these sort of tableaus and shit. So there's not he's not totally just an empty, but we don't really get insight into him. We don't really beyond. Beyond the
we
very
can only judge
simple
his actions.
Backstory yeah. of the murder and shit, we don't get a lot of insight. He's not a super developed character. We don't really get to spend much time inside of his head. When we do, we kind of just hear these whispers like, you know, that kind of shit. So why even discuss such a, I don't know, you can call him a shallow character, right?
Sure.
Yeah.
But... You know, the reason I wanted to do it is because despite the simplicity of the character, obviously he's captured people's fucking imaginations. I mean, he's in the fucking, he was in the Mortal Kombat X as a fucking downloadable character.
Well,
he was, he's got his own fucking video game that was pretty successful a few years back. Tons of fucking movies. You show someone a hockey mask, like the Jason hockey mask, no one's confused about what the fuck that is.
No.
Or who that represents.
I mean, I think it's the very thing that you mentioned at the top of this that has made him stick. He's kind of the personification of that faceless fear of being stabbed or murdered to death by some psychopath. And he's all purpose in that way.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? In other fucking slasher films, there were limitations on that slasher's ability to get at you. Freddy, you know, was
in your dreams.
And Michael Myers was only after a select few people. I mean, he'd killed a lot of people along the way, but, you know, he had a few people he wanted to get revenge on.
Right.
Jason doesn't really show that. He's just the guy
it's
in the
very
dark with
indiscriminate.
A knife.
So let's kind of talk about... Actually, before we even really get too far into Jason, let's kind of delve into what I call the Friday the 13th formula.
Okay.
Because it's a very simple formula. It'll only take about a second to fucking explain.
Totally.
In fact, one of you guys could probably explain it if you really wanted to.
The killables.
Yep, these are. That's exactly what I call them. The cast of killables.
I hope I don't get murdered.
The real basic formula. Cast of killables shows up at Camp Crystal Lake for whatever reason. Sometimes they're counselors. Sometimes they're just kids looking for a party. You know, there's various reasons and contrivances.
Yeah,
how they
have
end
to
up
go
there.
To the lake, basically.
But somehow a bunch of young people end up at Camp Crystal fucking Lake.
Mm-hmm.
And one by one, they're brutally murdered by Jason Voorhees until finally someone either kills or disables Jason until the fucking next time. Very few of the movies deviate from that formula in any significant way. And we'll obviously discuss them as they happen. And you notice Kevin Bacon up there.
Yeah.
This is actually one of his first movie roles, although he would actually go on to lie about it and claim that this was not his first movie role, but actually I think it is actually his first screen appearance.
Oh, he doesn't he's trying to distance himself.
Yeah, he tried to disown
Why?
This one. I don't know.
This is a huge success.
I think it was because it was considered so lowbrow and shit. Now, obviously, every one of these movies was panned by critics, and they got more panned by critics as they went along.
Well, of course.
Not a single one was well-received. Now, it seems that critics over time have softened on the original film.
Yeah. Nostalgia.
Maybe out of nostalgia or something like that.
Oh, dude, it's 100% out of nostalgia. Like, people talk about, like, it's like... There's a big, obviously, thing in our culture now, like, shitting from the 80s and 70s and 90s is kind of, like, revered.
That's because we're all, you know, getting old enough to be sitting around reading blogs about movies we used to like and shit.
Right.
You know what I mean? So there's a market for... Because clearly audiences loved these movies.
Right.
100%.
Absolutely.
So...
Especially horror audiences.
It's another example of that, like, rotten, you know, Rotten Tomatoes phenomenon that we see all the time where... You know, the critics are rotten, but
the audience score is
off the charts, you know?
Yeah, and it's weird because usually as an adult, I'm more prone to side with the critics, honestly. Not always, but more often than not. But on these movies, maybe just because of my nostalgia, because these were movies... I used to rent these movies religiously as a kid.
Oh, yeah, you
so my background was I fucking loved these movies. I would watch them ad nauseum. I'd probably seen... Like, of the first, like, 9 movies, I've probably seen them all, like, 20 times a piece or something.
This is all you... Me and Peter would go to the video store, yeah.
Constantly. I don't think I went to the... I mean, there was a period of time where I didn't go to the video store without renting at least one of the fucking Friday the 13th movies.
Yeah.
Like, I loved these movies. So let's talk about them. I love this cover, by the way.
It's a great cover. It's a great tagline. You know, you can see why this movie made so much fucking money. And they did a lot of good work with their fucking $500,000 because, I don't know, this is probably the best in the series if you want my, like, opinion about it.
And look, you know, if this, it's just like, it's such a, this like, scene they've painted just looks like real, like, peaceful and kind of serene. I mean, there's a little bit of a spooky factor to it because it's like... cabin in the woods
and,
at night
and having that dead body outline holding a knife, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
So it's like a chalk outline holding this fucking knife. It's just
it's coming for you
poster.
That's what's coming for you, right? So as many people know, but maybe there's still some who are unaware, Jason Voorhees is not the original killer.
Nope.
In Friday the 13th.
Oh.
Throughout the film, you don't see the killer. In fact, a lot of the kills take place from the first-person perspective. Not all of them, but some of them do. It's a bit of a murder mystery. In the end, it's revealed that the killer is Pamela Voorhees, Jason's mother.
Jason's mama does it.
Jason was never conceived of by Sean S. Cunningham as a homicidal maniac. He was conceived of as a catalyst for Pamela Voorhees' actions, and he was a victim, straight up. So when this movie came out, there was no concept of Jason as the killer, so this isn't supposed to be some kind of crazy twist or anything.
Right.
This is just the original conception of it. Jason in the film is just a catalyst for his mother's murderous rage. The backstory is that in 1957, 12-year-old Jason Voorhees drowned in Crystal Lake while the two camp counselors who were supposed to be watching him were instead off having sex.
Damn.
1 year later, in 1958, those two counselors were having sex again, and they were murdered by an unknown assailant, and the camp was shut down until 1980, when a group of young adults attempt to reopen and refurbish the camp, and these are the characters of the movie that we just saw over here. They are, of course, all murdered one by one with a killer who turns out to ultimately be Mrs. Voorhees.
Yeah, I always loved the fucking last scene of this movie where they fucking kill her, dude.
Yes.
That is that is an amazing scene.
She is the only survivor of the massacre, the 1980 massacre that this movie depicts, is a character named Alice Hardy, who is an aspiring artist from California. Not that her character traits matter.
Yeah.
Pamela Voorhees attempts to murder Alice as she murdered all the other counselors, but Alice is able to gain the upper hand and actually decapitates Mrs. Voorhees with a machete.
Pretty awesome.
So Jason only appears very briefly in this movie, and only in a, it's like a tacked on ending jump scare. Do you remember that jump scare at all, Paul?
Not really, no.
So Alice is floating in a small boat on Crystal Lake when suddenly the rotting corpse of young Jason Voorhees pops out of the water and drags her underneath.
Oh, so they're teasing the sequel already.
Well, it was never intended that way. It was just meant to be... They were actually inspired by the jump scare at the end of Carrie. Do you remember that?
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah.
Where Carrie's hand... You know, Sue goes to place flowers on Carrie's grave, and Carrie's hand pops out. They felt like our movie needs something like that.
Okay.
So they just tossed in this last-minute thing, and it also turns out to be a dream sequence. We'll go ahead and show it to you. So here's Alice. She survived the horror at Crystal Lake.
Everything's going to be just fine.
Everything's going to be... Oh, no!
Ah! Oh, that's awesome.
So that's what happened. Now, actually, that was not in the original script.
Whoa.
This is makeup artist Tom Savini, who came up with this scene because he thought it would look cool. And everyone was just like, let's go along. That sounds cool. Plus, of course, it meant more opportunity for him to sit here and do this
makeup job.
Pretty awesome makeup job, honestly. Yeah. And he's a renowned makeup artist for a reason. And, you know, even though he was doing young Jason's appearance here, this would actually go on to serve as the basis for Jason's appearance throughout the series.
So he kind of developed like the template for what Jason looked like.
Yeah, not really knowing what he was doing, he kind of created the character.
He was actually trying to create like kind of a sympathetic, deformed child with, you know, hydrocephaly and shit like that. And he ended up actually creating the template for what the brutal, you know, killer Jason Voorhees would ultimately be.
Right.
And, of course, it is because of this deformity that Jason hides behind various masks. Well, really only two. Speaking of two, let's just get into the next movie. So Alice from the first movie, her victory over Mrs. Voorhees is pretty short-lived because she's killed almost immediately in this movie.
Of course.
Okay, so here's where you got to really kind of like... So the first movie was a mom who was crazed from the drowning death of her son decides to kill all the camp counselors.
Yeah, as you know, revenge.
So but there's a pretty... You don't have to strain credulity that much to accept that premise.
No.
No, not at all.
But you're going to have to kind of open your mind now. Because it turns out that young Jason somehow survived drowning and wandered off to live in the woods where he just kind of lived there for, you know, decades on his own. Surviving in the woods.
I think he found some fucking steroids in the woods or something, dude.
Looking for his mom. Waiting for his mom.
Uh-huh.
He finally finds his mom, but it's at the moment when she's being decapitated by Alice.
He was there?
Yeah.
What the fuck, dude?
The first time he sees his mom in 20 years or however long it's been, he sees her and you imagine his joy.
Mom.
Mom!
Dude.
And then he sees her head severed from her body.
That's like a Greek tragedy, TJ.
Well, I tell you what, that would be a good origin story for a guy that just kills people indiscriminately.
Exactly. So, anyway, he jams an ice pick through Alice's head in, like, the first 3 or 4 minutes of the movie.
That's only fair.
She dies.
She deserved it.
Then, for no reason, they skip 5 years later, which really is going to fuck up the timeline in a little bit here. But it's fine, because another bunch of idiots decide, hey... You know where's a good place to camp?
Crystal Lake.
Yeah, the place where everyone always
good
gets...
Good old Crystal Lake.
A place where... What, at that place 10 known... people have been murdered?
So, already, like, in 1958, there was murders there. And then when people tried to reopen it in 1980, there was murders there. But
I love
you know
that, I love that Jason's mom was just chilling for 30 years watching that empty camp, just waiting for somebody to try.
Yep.
Well, that's already, you know, a little out there.
So, of course, then the cycle begins with yet another cast of killables. Make sure I have the right thing here.
Error.
TJ has committed an error.
So, oh, no, no, no.
So this is Jason making his debut as a slasher.
Yep, the old potato sack on the head routine.
You might notice that, it doesn't look quite right, does it?
Definitely doesn't cut the same menacing angle that the hockey mask does. Also, the overalls and flannel.
That does not work at all,
It gives him a farmery appearance. Maybe that's what they were going for.
He's a country bumpkin, dude.
Yeah, where did he get those Oshkosh bagosh fucking overalls is what I want to know.
Yeah.
If he's living out in the goddamn woods. Maybe he killed a farmer and took him out. Yeah.
Makes sense to me.
But he's got a mining pick, too.
It just doesn't work for the character.
He also has...
his mom's head?
Yeah, he also has a shrine where his mother's head is
now that's pretty
featured
cool.
prominently.
That's pretty metal right there.
That's pretty awesome.
He takes instruction from it. It guides him.
Well, obviously.
Of course, what it guides him to do is kill.
Kill them, Jason. Kill them all.
So this film also contained a jump scare ending.
Oh.
It was actually kind of a tradition in these earlier ones to do the big jump scare finale. So let's take a look at what they chose to do for this one. So they've already killed Jason at this point.
Who could it be?
And they're like, oh no, is Jason still alive? Because they heard something at the door. Aww.
It's just a little shih tzu. Aww.
It's just muffins.
Oh, come here. We missed you.
Everything's fine.
We're okay.
Oh, man.
Aw,
something's
going to
happen, dude. Something's going to happen.
I don't think so, Paul.
Nah,
I think
dude.
This is going to be a genuine happy ending.
I can feel it building up.